Hi, everyone. It's Mary Lou Tyler. Today, I have a guest that you probably already listened to his podcast. It's called Accelerate. Andy Paul is with us today. He's the founder of Zero Time Selling. Welcome, Andy. How are you doing?
Mary Lou, thanks for having me. I'm doing great.
Fabulous. I am so excited to have you on the show, primarily because you have interviewed how many people now on your podcast?
I've interviewed 450. I think we just released, as we talked today, probably 380 episodes, something like that. So we're a little bit ahead of the curve in terms of what we interview.
Yeah. So if you're just getting to hear Andy, he started in October 2015. So go all the way back then and put those podcasts in your favorite listening device.
Started episode one. Don't miss a single one.
Don't miss a single one. Yes, exactly. So, we focus on top of funnel, and the people who listen to me are, they like process, they love technology, but I think we're having issue, or we're still being challenged with the human component of all this. So what types of things have you learned or do you focus on in your business now in order to blend this technology with the human aspect of sales?
Well, I think that what we try to focus on when I'm talking to groups and doing workshops with companies or coaching a CEO about a process that they're using for their sales is, okay, you've invested a bunch of time and effort and money to actually bring a buyer, a potential buyer, to the point where you're actually going to have a conversation with them. What do you do then, right? What happens then? And what we find is that reps by and large are sort of unprepared for what happens then. And this first instant is so critical because research has found that people form perceptions of you as an individual at sort of a subconscious level. They call it precognitive processing. And it happens within a quarter of a second, 250 milliseconds, the time it takes you to blink an eye. Somebody's formed a perception of you. So you think about the importance of, and on top of that, the studies and science again shows that perceptions are very sticky. It's very difficult to change someone's perception of you once it's been formed. Even when they're presented with evidence showing that their perception is wrong, it's hard for them to change perceptions. And Daniel Kahneman talks about this in his book and the studies that he had done in his book, Thinking Fast and Slow. It's just the way we're wired. Our brain is wired. So you think about that from a sales perspective is we don't spend enough time thinking about really what is that first moment, right? What are we doing to start engaging with the buyer, building the rapport, building the relationship, building these ideas? We talk about, people buy from people they know, like, and trust. But what are we doing right at that first moment? I mean, you really have to bring your A game from the get-go every time you interact with the prospect, but especially on that first call, it's so essential.
Now, we tend to warm up that chill by leveraging technology in the form of emails. Maybe people still send direct mail. I have some clients who are still sending postcards. Mm-hmm. Does that first moment start with the first conversation, no matter what modality, or are you talking the first conversation voice conversation?
Well, I think it certainly can be impacted by the non-voice communications. And I'll give an example. I mean, you get emails all the time from, SDRs. I'm sure yourself, I certainly do. Mm-hmm. And as a business owner. And I was just marveling sort of at one today that was sort of the third email in a sequence I'd gotten from a company everybody would recognize if I gave their name. And there were misspellings in it and grammatical errors. And it's like, okay, yeah, I haven't spoken to this person. In this case, I'm not going to because it doesn't fit. Product isn't something that's of interest to me. But if I was going to make a decision about whether to speak to this person or not, that would have influenced my perception of them. Because I'm thinking, if I'm going to invest money with a service or product from a company, I want to have a fairly strong sense that they're, strong attention to detail, they're, focused on quality, all these things that you're giving an image of in your written communications as well.
Is this concept biased in any way based on how old you are or when you were born? Are we in the older generation? I'm putting myself in that older generation, by the way, not you, Andy.
I was going to say.
But are we being brought up, quote unquote, differently than, say, my kids? Are there levels of interaction that matter most based on when you were, where you are in that spectrum of when you were born, do you think?
No. So okay. I think what happens is that you know, the errors are committed more frequently, that people are less experienced. Mm-hmm. And that as you get more experience, you begin to understand that this is really important. And that it's not just window dressing, but that it actually is important. And people, you know, it's part of the maturation process throughout your career. So, but it's still important, right? Because a lot of our proactive outreach is being done by, at least in certain fields, in tech field for sure, being done by people disproportionately in the earlier part of their careers. Mm-hmm. And so it's these interactions that are, you know, creating these impressions that potential buyers have. I mean, you know, another example is I received another one recently where somebody was very insistent that they, you know, they're trying to set up a meeting for their regional vice president of sales to speak with me. And they're very insistent, but, you know, their emails had multiple font types in it because they obviously been cutting and pasting.
Oh, so, cardinal sin.
Right. But I mean, pay attention to that, right? I mean, these things are important. Mm-hmm. I mean, are they absolutely decisive? No, but you're creating a perception in the mind of somebody that you want to have some conversation with. And so why won't you spend another minute to make sure that you're going to make that easier to have happen than to make it harder to have it happen.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I think the other thing that I've noticed with calling into different regions is that culturally there are some differences too. For example, I live here in the Midwest right now, mm-hmm. and it's very permission-based. So the email flow, the gist, the sentiment really has to be more of a permission-based type of email. What I mean by that is that there's a politeness that exists in the Midwest that maybe on the coasts it's a little more directive, a little bit more forced, whereas here it's gentler. Are those kinds of things also that where you've seen that need to be taken into consideration, or is it people will give leeway to that, but the actual message itself has to satisfy our innate desires and needs to have a closeness with somebody?
Well, I think that the best way to make it easier on yourself is to have a standard that's acceptable to everybody. Mm. So, yes, I mean, people may be more accepting, let's say, a more casual conversation, let's say, in California. Mm-hmm. Than perhaps in Des Moines, Iowa, where you are. But so, on the other hand, if you write something that's acceptable to someone in Des Moines and you send it to someone in California, it's going to be acceptable to them in California as well.
Yeah.
So rather than put yourself through the hassle of saying, I need to tweak my message because I need to understand exactly where they're going, it might be one thing if it's going from country to country.
Yes.
You know, where there are some, you know, very established norms that are different. You know, within the U.S., I think that you know, create a standard that works for everybody and, you know, be effective, be have high quality, check your work, spend an extra minute. It's just a minute, right? That's the whole thing we're talking about. I'm not talking about tons of time. You know, take a minute, just ask somebody else to look at it. That's the easiest thing to do, right? Have somebody else just look at it before you send it. Because then a lot of this stuff's templatized anyway. Mm-hmm. So there's just no excuse for that to happen. Because again, you're putting the time and effort and investment you're making, you're putting it at risk on something stupid.
That, and, you know, right now with the emphasis on account-based selling, there's only a small universe of people with whom you can have conversation.
So, well, if you're selling enterprise accounts, yeah, for
yes,
sure.
Yes, each record is very precious. Mm-hmm. So, you know, why not take the time? What I also like to do is actually read my emails before I send them. And that helps me clarify and get more clarity around the message that I'm trying to convey before I hit that send button.
Well, I think the thing, right. I think that's a great tip. And I think for a lot of people listening, when you think about, you know, the process of writing an email, let's say, it's a lot like talking to the customer. You know, you actually mm-hmm. have a physical conversation. Is that is you have to eliminate the distractions. You know, I think part of the reason we get these errors is because people are trying to multitask while they're right there, their email. They're trying to multitask while they do everything. And the science is, you know, unequivocally clear. We cannot multitask. Humans are incapable of multitasking. And multitasking is not trying to do two projects at once. It's trying to write an email and then taking 5 seconds and glancing over at your phone when the screen lights up to tell you that, you know, you got a notification about something. Mm-hmm. That's multitasking. And by taking your focus away for just even 5 seconds to look at that phone and then go back to your email, you're not going to be able to engage the same way. You know, there's a study done by scientists at Carnegie Mellon University where they got some study subjects over a period of time, and then they brought them in one at a time in a room, gave them a test, and sort of unexpectedly during the test, they interrupted them with a phone call. And then they went back and completed the test after the phone call. And what they found is after the phone call, which lasted less than a minute, the people performed 20% less well on the test. Hmm. As somebody summarized, being interrupted made them 20% dumber. So, yeah, when we're talking about writing emails, you know, it's like talking to a customer, take the distractions out of the way, focus on one thing at a time and get it done, make sure it's right, and then move on to the next one.
So we have the what in terms of in the moment, as you said. How I have a blank slate in front of me. I have a piece of paper sitting here and I want to craft, at least get my talking points down on paper. Are there building blocks that we can use in order to think through how this in the moment conversation should begin? And what's the beginning, middle, and end? Or is it something that over time we develop our own rhythms to?
You're saying for actually having the physical phone call?
Yeah. We're actually getting ready now. We've done all our pre-work. They're receptive to us coming in. And we're getting ready to have that first conversation. What kind of prep work? Or is there such a thing as a building block of prep work that, based on the psychology and the science, that we can put together? Or at least have prepared so that when we do speak, we are not what I call bungling it. You say something else. You had more positive spin on it.
But you're optimizing the experience.
Optimizing, yes. Mary Lou Bungle, Andy optimization.
Glass is half full always. So, I think that a couple things that, and Robert Cialdini talks about this in his latest book, and David Hoffeld in his book Science of Selling talks about it. Is that you know, we know about people buy from people they know, like, and trust. There's actually a fourth element there, which is another like. And what science has found through the research is that people are more likely to buy from people that they think like them. Mm. Okay? Mm-hmm. So we're always focused on them liking us, but it's equally as important for them to believe that we like them. So how do you begin to establish that in this relationship you build with them? Well, that starts right at the beginning with, you know, sort of dreaded word for many people, small talk. Mm-hmm. So as you're planning your call, is, you know, are you doing your research on this individual? You know, are you looking at their various social profiles to see what they might be interested in, what they're talking about, having conversations or posting? And are you prepared with just sort of an opening question of, you know, on a personal note? You know, in some cases, actually, what the science found is that it's actually just as asking very sincerely, hey, how are you doing? As an opening gambit, which in some cases makes, I don't know, people feel uncomfortable to ask, but, you know, asked authentically, it's very powerful. And this, again, the research has shown that this is a great way to begin a conversation with somebody.
I can hear people cringing, Andy.
Oh, I know. I can hear people cringing as well, but it's but the science shows that it works, right? That it opens them up and they start thinking, oh, this person likes me. You know, and you follow it up with just something of interest to them personally. Mm-hmm. Well, then you start building that bridge with them, that sort of them liking you and you liking them, or they're perceiving that you like them, which, again, as, you know, David Hoffeld points out in his book, and Cialdini and Kahneman, all these guys, that's important. That's an influencer. So you as an individual have to understand that, you know, in today's world, you know, you are the first line of differentiation between you and your competitors. It's not your product, not your service, it's you. And so this is one thing that you need to start with. You know, if it's an in-person call or if you're on a video call with somebody, you know, you're on GoToMeeting or Join.me or, you know, whatever vehicle you're using, Zoom is smile. Now, if you have to put down on your prep list, smile when I see the person, that makes a difference. Mm-hmm. It makes a difference in their state of mind in terms of how they receive the information you're going to give them.
You know, it's funny. That's one of my big training points on using the telephone is to smile while you're talking on the phone, because that can really be heard by the recipient. And it sounds kind of funky, but it really works. And plus, you feel better. You're happy. You're smiling.
Exactly.
You're sounding excited. You're just, you know, enamored with them, with your product, with this conversation. And it's
your
really,
body language, as evidenced by your voice. Yeah, it changes your sense of confidence.
A long way. Yep.
Yeah. So put on your list. You're talking about prepping. Number one, smile. Mm-hmm. Number two, ask how they're feeling. Three, you know, what's personal thing that you're gonna bring up? Now, I'm assuming this is the first call, you know, isn't that this is not like, hey, you know, can I have 20 seconds of your time? This is, you know, you're gonna have your first meaningful conversation with somebody.
Right.
This is the detail that you have to go to. Now, with these things come something I've written about and talked about a lot recently is you have to eliminate the distractions. So I was in a workshop giving to a company that had roughly 100 inside sales reps. And I asked the question, I said, okay, how many people leave their phone, their cell phone, smartphone, out on their desks when they're making calls? Raise your hands. 100% raise their hands. I said, okay, out of that, you either raise your hands, all of you, how many show your hands, or raise your hands, is if you get a notification or your phone buzzes or you get an alert or something, that you look at the screen of your phone while you're talking to the customer. Again, virtually 100%. And this gets back to the show I talked about, you know, multitasking. You can't do it. You know, if you've invested all this time and effort, maybe you've made 15 outreaches to this prospect and you finally get them to get on the phone with them or, you know, wherever you're meeting, and you get distracted by phone sitting on your desk, you may have just messed up completely at that point in time. Because it's going to take you, for a little distraction as long as 5 seconds, it'll take you maybe up to a minute, based on research, to get back to the point in the conversation where you're fully engaged in again. But in the meantime, you've missed a minute's worth of information the customer is giving you. And they know it. They know it.
They do know it. And not to mention, just to get to that call is so much effort.
Right.
So many people are involved to get you that first call served up, especially if you're a larger company.
Yeah. So why would you jeopardize it by keeping your phone on your desk? Right. So just turn when you know, sitting down to make calls or make a call, receive a call, take your phone, turn it off, put it away. Turn your computer screen off unless you need to reference it for something with the customer. Eliminate the distractions. Be present. You know, somebody used the term recently, I thought it was really great is on virtual calls, you have to look the customer in the eye when you're on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great imagery.
I love that. Yes.
Right. Look the customer in the eyes. Cause that means you're going to maintain that focus and that presence and mindfulness that you're there for them. And so that's just the start of it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So then, you know, beyond that is you need to have your questions lined up. And yeah, there's a lot of debate about, you know, what type of questions you should ask and so on. So yeah, my preference is use what I call a killer question to start the conversation. And this is a question that asks the customer something about their business that they should know but don't.
So that sounds scary.
And this is not something sales reps necessarily have to come up with on themselves. I mean, they should be questions that, you know, develop through experience of other sales reps and other people within the company and so on. But what you're doing is you're starting the conversation by asking them something that demonstrates that you guys have some insights into their business. And it forces them to pause and think. Because one of the things that's happened, I believe, based on what I've seen, is that, you know, as we've become more scripted from the sales perspective in terms of the questions we ask and so on, so too have the buyers become scripted in the responses they give. So if you're the third person talking to a buyer about this particular project and, you know, procurement that they're working on, you know, if you're going down a fairly standard set of questions, you're going to get a fairly standard set of answers that aren't going to provide you any real depth of insight into what their real requirements are and how you can help, you know, provide the optimum solution for them that perhaps is differentiated from what your competitors are talking about. So the best way to start that conversation is, as I said, deliver one of these questions that forces them to pause and think. Mm-hmm. Takes them off of their script as well.
Yes. Back in the old days, we used to use the spin selling technique, the implication questions.
Right.
Which are, what I love about those questions are you do not need, and I think Neil even says this in his book, that it isn't, you're not going to get great at it the more you do it or the more you've been selling. You continually need to practice it. It's not, it's something where coming in day one as a rep, you can't ask these questions. And 10 years as a rep, you're going to be a master of it because you are constantly changing. There's a constantly changing landscape. Uh-huh. So you continually improve, master, work on these types of questions. And they are unsettling, but they're provocative. And as you said, they, you know, they perk up a bit because they're like, no one's ever asked me that before. Or,
exactly.
Wow, I didn't really think of it that way. I mean, that's not the responses you want was, wow, okay, that came out of left field.
Well, suddenly they're engaged.
Yes.
Right. So again, right. Kahneman talks about in his book, Thinking Fast and Slow, about, you know, people have two forms of thought, system one thinking, system two. System one is just sort of the way we, you know, 75% of our day is sort of habitual behavior. The way we react to things is sort of driven by past experiences. That's sort of the path of least resistance for our brain to take that approach. And so, you know, if we don't challenge that, we're just going to get the same old answers from the prospects. But if we ask this type of question, another great way to sort of start the conversation is sort of the simple gap analysis, right? Is, you know, where do you want to be in 12 months or 18 months or a time frame that's, you know, important to them? Where are you today? And then you get to that implication question. It's like, okay, well, what's your plan to get from here to there?
And why haven't you made it there?
Well, and then you follow up, right? So yeah, why haven't you made it there yet? And so on. But so, you know, that's a sort of simple three-part format that anybody can use. Doesn't take a lot of background. And it opens the door to a conversation about, okay, well, naturally they're going to turn to you and say, well, how could you help us with that?
Right. And it's a bit of the story arc, you know, I don't know if you read the book Resonate by Nancy Duarte,
but she
does presentations, but she utilizes the hero's journey.
Right.
And it starts with a revelation of, wow, here we are at this moment in time, but I want to get way over there and I have no idea how to get there. So the guide comes in, which is you. Mm-hmm. And gives them a plan, and it's either you're going to go with me on the plan and reach where you want to go, or there's, you know, there are consequences if you do not take this path. So there's a little bit of that sort of uncertainty and doubt. They used to call it FUD, fear, uncertainty, mm-hmm. and doubt, of trying to get someone to really off their game, you know, but do it in a way that is, you know, you're here to hold their hand through it at the same time. So that comes back to what you said about, you know, you can, I am the guide. I'm the guide who's going to get you to where you want to go. And I'm going to hold your hand along the way. I'm not going to like push you into the abyss and have you sink or swim, you know, kind of thing. And I think that in this day and age, I know it's becoming more important. And I think you said that the research is showing that it's becoming even more important now that we're so multitasking and so much technology around us, that the human element is desperately trying to resurface in our conversations.
Yeah, well, I think the buyers, the need for them, part of the buyers hasn't changed, right? I mean, there's maybe an increasing range of products that the buyers are capable of going through the entire buyer's journey on their own. Mm-hmm. But in the business-to-business space, I mean, it's, if you're selling a solution, yeah, they can do more of it on their own than they were, you know, 10, 15 years ago. We all know that. That's, you know, established. But they still need you.
Right.
And they need you to be good. So if you're just like everybody else, yeah, I remember listening to this call not that long ago with a rep was an AE sort of doing a discovery call, and it was kind of painful. Listen to the guy was pretty well trained and fairly knowledgeable, but not really in the moment, right? We're not really asking a question that forced the customer to pause and think. So he started getting rote answers. And the one time he didn't get sort of a rote answer, he didn't recognize it at that point in time. So rather than the customer left the door open for him to come in with a great follow-up question, which gentlemen, if you've ever read the book called The Coaching Habit by Michael Bungay Stanier, excellent book. It's an excellent sales book, let alone a great coaching book. But he talks about this concept of extending your curiosity. Mm-hmm. So you ask the first question, but you have to extend your curiosity to the second question. And you know, he frames it in terms of what he calls the AWE question, the awe question, which is, you know, that's really interesting. And what else can you tell me about that?
Mm. Or tell me more is what
or tell me more. But I like this. And what else can you tell me about that? And
I like that too.
So then if you're alive, you know, if you're focused, if you're not looking at your phone, if you're not distracted, and somebody opens that door a bit, you've got now a question to go kick down that door and ask those folk, you know, rush in with the second question that's going to take you to a point in the conversation that they're not reaching with other vendors.
Yeah.
So again, you've made yourself the point of differentiation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
all great stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the thing about, you know, what I call the killer questions, or you talk the implication questions, is that do yourself a favor, and I know some people are going to be horrified by this, but stop asking about pain points. Because I don't think, and I don't, my experience has shown me, and I think research is showing as well, is that, you know, people are investing in new solutions to achieve certain goals. You know, it's forward thinking. You know, a pain point means we're going to put a Band-Aid on something, right? And you fix the pain point, that's yesterday's problem. This company's moving. They want to go somewhere. You know, your questions are, where really should be focused on, where do you want to be? And how are we going to help you get there? And that's a much better, broader conversation to have than, what are your pain points?
Yeah, I think the term challenges is something that we still hold on to, because challenges for us help us map to the possibility. So if we have the challenge and we hear the challenge and how they're describing where they are today, then we can link that to a case study or a very simple story about a client who's maybe mid-journey in getting to the end goal, and how they were able to remove that as an obstacle on the way towards the opportunity.
Right. Which,
so
that's,
yeah, from a
basically
planning,
what I was talking about though is, yeah. But you know, too often, because again, we're giving people these tools and we're not really telling them the why behind the how.
Exactly. Yeah.
So the how is, you know, ask about their pain points, but really the why is we want to ask them, you know, what they're trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
And this may be, as you said, an obstacle to achieving what they want. But when you talk about pain points, we make it sound like, you know, taking aspirin to resolve a headache, and that's sort of a, you know, a temporary issue as opposed to something that's integral to what they're trying to achieve.
With the vision. Yeah, it's a quick fix versus,
right.
I'm...
How do we really help you?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you do yourself a favor when you're dealing with the customers talking and more of this, you know, these vision terms, right? Where do you want to be? What's the path? How do we help you get there? What are the obstacles in the way? As opposed to saying, well, you know, what's your pain points? What's keeping you up at night? I mean, I heard somebody say that on a call not that long ago, which, you know, I wanted to hang up the phone for him. because they're meaningless questions.
Yeah. Especially framed that way. There's other ways to say what's keeping you up at night, which is what we're talking about. And it's really getting, I think the biggest thing that I'm seeing, and I try to get this drilled into my folks, is that you are your persona, whoever you're talking to on the other end, you're a colleague of theirs. That mindset is that you're a colleague of theirs, and higher up than they are on the phone, but you're really trying to help guide them towards a strategy, a vision, a way to get from point A to point B. You're not necessarily diagnosing them. you kind of know what could be wrong already with them. But you're just trying to understand where they are relative to progress along the path of where they should be.
Mm-hmm.
And when you view it that way, it's a very different conversation than coming from, where's your owie? You
know? Where's your owie? Well, I mean, you raise a great point. And Bob Terson, who wrote the book Selling Fearlessly, talks, one of his key things that he points out in the book, which I thought was a great, great thing for younger people to understand in their careers, is that, you have to talk to prospects as their peer.
Yeah. That's
doesn't matter which level within the corporation you're talking to, you are their peer, even if it's the CEO.
Yes.
Because otherwise, if you have a different perspective, it's like you're meeting a famous celebrity, right? And you're sort of awed by it. And you're not going to get into the types of questioning and so on that you need to get to.
Mm-hmm.
So, having that perspective as a colleague, as a peer, very important. And I wished I'd learned that earlier in my career. I mean, I got to that point sort of unknowingly. I didn't really put words to it till, reading Bob's book. But I used to marvel when I was 22 years old, starting my career selling, $100,000, $200,000 computer systems to companies and looking all of 15 at the time and thinking, why'd they ever buy from me?
So. Fake it till you make it kind of thing. I mean, I think it wasn't
that I didn't know what I was talking about. It was just like, I looked 15 and
I know I used to get that all the time because I would be on the phone helping people and then I would go see them and they're like, you're not the same person we were speaking with.
Yeah. Is your mom going to come?
Definitely. There's that. And the other thing the other piece of advice that's really helped me is to let go of the result. Just let go of what you want and really focus on what they want. And it makes so much difference in your conversations, in the karma of it all. It really does come around if you practice that.
Well, I had a story about this from early in my career where I was trying to sell, a computer system to a retailer, jewelry store that had multiple locations, and it was going to be a big order. And we had done everything. We had crossed the T's, dotted the I's. Mm-hmm. The guy had told us, pretty much that we were going to get this business, but we weren't getting the order. And I'd call the guy pretty frequently. I was pretty young at that time, and finally at one point. He calls me up and I go and visit this guy in his office. And he basically said, just to your point exactly, that he was going to give me the order, but not until he thought I wanted it less. And
oh my gosh. Wow.
That's because, it was that point as I was all focused on me and not on him.
Exactly. Yeah.
And, it's not, he was going to give me the order and we did get it, but, he deliberately held it back because... It was clear as I was talking to him that it was, more about getting the order for me as opposed to getting the order to get him started to help improve his operations.
And obviously taught you a lifelong lesson there.
Oh, absolutely. It was hugely embarrassing at the time, but a great lesson.
Yeah. Well, Andy, thank you so much for your time. Before we close out, I want you to tell us, because I'm sure people listening to this are like, okay, this is a missing component to all of our enamored love of technology. We need to dial it in and get the building blocks, the habits of having a really good, meaningful conversation with our prospects. So how do we get a hold of you?
Well, I mean, email me. You can do the old-fashioned ways. You can call me at 619-980-4002. I always love to talk to people. Email me at andy@zerotimeselling.com. You can follow me on Twitter. That's @zerotimeselling. Connect with me on LinkedIn. I'd love that. But most importantly, come listen to my podcast as well. So Accelerate, 6 episodes per week. Talking to all the great minds like Mary Lou Tyler in sales. And Yeah, the broad range of topics we cover, but you know, great guests and great conversation, just like we had here today.
Yeah, thank you. And I'll put some of these links. I think the material, some of the books you mentioned, I'm going to ask you offline to get me a list so we can put them in the show notes. Because a lot of times, you know, we are focused on the process, and I'm guilty of that, being a process expert. But I know that I'm just trying to serve up that first conversation using process as much as we can to go through hundreds and thousands of records. But it really comes down to, do you have that connection, that human connection with the person that you're trying to guide towards their solution, or what you know they need, and that you know you can solve that need because you believe in who you are and your product and your service? That's really what it's about.
Yeah. Well, I think people need to keep in mind, and I should talk about this in my books and when I do public presentations, so on, is that, you know, at the heart of sales is this bargain you strike with the buyer. They're going to invest some of their time in you. What are you going to give them in return? You know, this is the heart of the fundamental human to human selling, is they're going to give you some of their time. What are you going to give them in return? Now, if they give you some of their time and you give them nothing in return, nothing of value in return, then you broke the bargain and you're not going to get any more of their time.
Exactly.
And this works throughout the entire sales process. You know, you have this imperative every time they invest some of their time in you, you need to give them something where they get a return on their investment. And it has to be deliberate. You know, this can't be part of a, you know, robotic process, because as they move through the sales process, you know, they've got unique needs at each stage of it. You need to be, you know, consciously thinking about what it is that you're going to do.
Definitely. Thanks again, Andy. I totally enjoyed this conversation and appreciate you taking the time.
Honored to be here.